Are you a sheep? No. You're a dragon. Be a dragon.
This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female-identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Herring, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, my name is Amanda, and with me today is my awesome, hilarious, wonderful, squatty-pottied-up co-host, Monica! Hi, Monica.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for the amazing introduction and outing myself right there.
There is no judgment coming from me. I think a squatty potty is the coolest thing ever. Like, their marketing team is, like, on point. Have you seen the unicorn video? The unicorn poop
yes,
video?
Yes, I've seen the unicorn video.
Like, if anything, I'm just a little bit jealous.
That I have a squatty potty and you don't?
Yeah.
Hashtag Christmas wish list is all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm going to put it on there.
Amazing. Yeah. I thought it's great, you know, when you get to a certain age, sometimes it's nice to let it go. I'm actually pretty proud of that Frozen reference.
Yeah, well, that's definitely giving a new spin on that song. Maybe one I didn't want to think about before.
It's amazing. And on that note, Frozen 2 is out, or will be out soon, like in 4 days something, or it's already out when this episode is live. Oh. So yay!
I didn't know that was happening.
Where are you living? Under a rock?
Apparently.
Frozen 2 is like said to be an amazing sequel of an amazing and very successful Disney movie.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
I didn't really like Frozen. I mean, it didn't do it for me. There were so many better Disney movies.
I don't quite get why that turned out to be such a hyped movie. Wasn't quite sure because it wasn't really something hardcore for women's rights, but it seemed to be that so many people thought it was. I don't know.
But like how? Have like Lilo and her sister?
I don't know.
Tangled? Rapunzel is fucking badass.
Merida?
Yeah. And I guess Moana came out after Frozen, didn't that? So that doesn't count. But yeah, there's so many better Disney films, in my opinion.
I guess. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just a really great marketing coup from Disney for whatever reason. I think I need to rewatch it.
They had the same marketing team as the Squatty Potty.
Did they, though?
Well, it was all full of shit.
What?
I don't know. I was trying to say that Frozen is shit. And the Squatty Potty helps you create shit. I don't know. I lost my train of thought, okay? I just tried to make something up. And I like to say shit.
You just wanted to make the connection. Because I won't particularly say Frozen was shit. It was just probably not the best Disney movie I've ever seen.
It was meh.
Meh. On that note, Disney Plus launched, but we can't watch it yet.
Nope.
Sad times. And what the UK?
There's not really much on it, anyways.
What? There's so much on it, is what I've heard.
Tom was saying that there's actually not all that much on it. He's like, because we go to Florida on Friday, so by the time this episode's out, we'll be there for a week. And I was like, why don't we get Disney Plus for 2 months? And he was like, well, it's not really anything on it.
What the fuck? All the people, all the US people I have on my Facebook feed are delighted.
Yeah.
He's just saying that because he's sad that you can't have it at the moment.
Probably.
Yeah. That's
I do think that it was a silly move for Disney not to do a worldwide release, though, because shows like The Mandalorian are so available on other methods. So when it does get released here, like people are going to be like, oh, I've already seen the new stuff. So.
Yeah.
Why would I get this?
That's true. And I can't imagine that you can't. Apparently it was all faulty also. Like, there was so much shit happening. Which,
and there was a huge data breach, I think.
Oh, really? Nice. But what I mean is, I can't imagine that it's technically so difficult to set that up worldwide already. I mean, it comes to Germany in March. Isn't the UK also part of that group?
Oh, I don't know. I really stopped paying attention. I was like, we don't get it at launch? Fuck you, Disney.
Oh, man. I want
it. It will come here when it comes here, and then I will get on board with it. But until then, I'm just going to ignore it or get it in Florida for 2 months.
Yeah, I think you should at least try it in Florida for 2 months.
We'll see. We'll see.
It's only $8.
I know, it's like cheap as anything, but we'll see because, you know, my parents won't exactly be like, yeah, let's watch all the Disney shows. No.
Apparently you need to have a US credit card for that to work, though. It's what I heard. But yeah. Because people obviously tried to connect or buy it via VPN, but that didn't work.
Then I'll be like, Dad, buy Disney Plus for us all. And he'll be like, no.
So what are we going to talk about today?
We have a Geek Girl Reviews today.
It's amazing. It's been a while.
It's been way too long, really. So we had the pleasure of watching Feminists, What Were They Thinking? Which is a documentary available on Netflix that came out in 2017.
It's already quite long ago, to be fair. Yeah. And I find the title a bit misleading.
Me too.
Because it seems like it's a big fat-ass criticism towards feminism, which it's not really.
Yeah, it's like a celebration of feminism and like second wave feminism and how awesome it was.
That is very true. It's interesting because I think it plays a lot into the situation that especially the second wave feminism is criticized a lot now, or the new wave feminism seems to try to distinguish themselves again from whatever happened before. So I feel that's a documentary that tries to show again why it was necessary, how it's still valid, and how it's still important to stand up and call yourself a feminist, even though a lot of women nowadays consider themselves not feminists or like some other kind of feminist that is not like the second wave feminism women in there. Well, that was not a sentence, but you get what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. I would say that I learned quite a lot from this documentary in terms of maybe more firsthand experiences as opposed to this generalized overview of what was going on back in the 60s and 70s. And I have to say that the second wave feminism was really cool. Like, I kind of wish that I was back in that era, joining all those grassroots movements, hanging out with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin and these, like, I don't know, it was just class. I was like, I am on board with everything that is going on right now. I really enjoyed the documentary.
So basically how they set up this that thing was that there was a, how do you call it? Either like a book with images that a certain artist made or a photographer made and put together, which put all the feminists back in these times into the book and made pictures from it, basically.
Yeah, the book is called Emergence, and it's by a photographer called Cynthia McAdam. And it's very artistic look at women being women, like feminists. Women who are very involved in the feminist movement in the 60s and 70s getting their photographs taken, and like a good probably 60% of them are nude. There's a lot of naked ladies.
I haven't seen the 60%, to be fair.
Well, it was just as she was slipping through the book, I was like, most of these pictures are nude.
I would have said the total opposite. A few of them were nude, but most of them were dressed.
Oh, wow. No, I guess I noticed naked ladies more than you.
Yep. That's obvious right now. But I also it's like the, like boobs. So like, whatever.
It's like the violinist said. I can't remember her name, but she said that her picture where she's naked playing the violin, she's like, I don't see my nudity. All I see is a woman passionate about playing the violin.
Maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, I was like, huh, naked ladies. And you were like, oh, look at all these women being feminists and hardcore and really passionate about what they're doing.
I'm wondering if back initially when they created that book, If that was even, or in general, that Archer, all these photographies, if it was generally intended to be all about feminists, but more about women being women. And then later, and especially in hindsight, it turned out that a lot of people in the books were actually also in the feminist movement.
I feel like maybe it could have been like women that were in the feminist movement were maybe approached to be in this book because they would have been more open and willing to pose for the pictures.
I don't know. Because I had the feeling at some point she said they were meeting women on the street and asked them if they want to be taken, if they want to have pictures taken from them. That's why my initial thought was she approached random women and to show them their true selves, because that was what that was basically what she wanted them to do. Just be themselves as authentic as possible on these pictures that she was taking.
No, I totally see what you're saying. And I remember them saying that in the documentary. And I think that maybe for a good portion there was that. But then there must have been, because there's so many women that were famous and involved in like the art community and acting and music and composing. And like, I feel like they had to have had some level of recognition, maybe.
I mean, I guess that's also the circle that you're living in, right? I mean, if the artist who created these images was living with these women and they were part of her everyday lives, then obviously those are the women around her as well. And those are the ones that then she will be the first ones to be in the book, I guess.
Mm.
Because wherever she walks, other women like her will be as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like so. Attracts like.
Yeah.
Yeah. They asked a question towards the very beginning of the documentary. They said, do women look different because of feminism? What do you think?
You mean especially in that book, or?
Maybe not necessarily in the book.
And do you mean compared to like in the 19 somethings to now? Or do you mean a woman who has experienced or has realize that it's important to be a feminist and the before and after from that?
Like, no, I think my question is, do you think that feminists look different from women who aren't feminists?
Okay, that's a different question. If anything, I think that maybe women or feminist women are more self-confident, maybe. That would be the only thing where I would say that would make sense, because they fight for their rights. They are very aware of what's going on. They often smell manipulation before it's happening, or at least they notice it earlier because of how reflective they are about their situation in the world and the society and everything. So I guess, yeah, maybe they're more self-aware and more self-confident in that regard. And that's what might be something that distinguishes them visually from women who are not feminists.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I guess there are also very self-confident, not very feminist women around.
True. Yeah, it's an interesting question that they asked, because looking through, like flipping through Emergence in the documentary, it was like these women are all very self-assured and they all have that look of defiance. Like, not gonna bomb your building or something, but like they all looked like they were ready to make change. Like they were going to defy the current like societal norms. And
I mean, especially in the book, we have to be aware that it was also during a time where it was an uproar revolutionary movement. So They were gonna do it. They were gonna go out and fight the fight, right? So I see how that's also a bit of a subject to the time that pictures were taken in. Also, I mean, the 68 movement and everything, a lot of nudity and hippie and blah and all of that, that was all going on at the same time. So I guess that's really a big subject to these times, I guess. And especially coming from a feminist artist who has exactly that intention in her in mind, we basically look through her lens as well. So we're basically double feministed in that moment. Feministed? Whatever.
I see what you're saying.
But I think feminism can come in all forms, shapes, and sizes, and in all ways. And I think every single one of them is important. In so many other, like with so many other things, it's important to recognize the history around all of that, because they basically were talking about the same issue. Like the second wave of feminism also was not happy to be associated with the first wave of feminism, with the suffragettes. So that's something that we have to be aware of, that we all kind of want to distinguish ourselves from the past in a way, and that's often connected to fighting it somehow. But it's really important to be aware of what happened to, one, not forget. Like, it's not only with feminism, but also with all the racism and stuff. So all the Nazi Germany and all that shit. If we forget about what happened, it's easier to fall into the same trap again. So
yeah, repeat patterns and really just not actually move forward, but you're just moving parallel to yourself.
Yeah, totally. And documentaries like this show you at least that basically they were fighting for the same things, even though it seems like we've come so far now and we're not feminists anymore, and it's not necessary because we've come so far. And especially with the 2017 situation where they were still talking about all the abortion stuff, if they were gonna make it illegal again and all the shit. That's, again, news again in 2017, 18, 19, and not only in 1960s, 70s.
I feel like a lot of the problems, like you say, that happened then are still very much here, but there's a lot that has changed because of the movement in the 70s. So it's like the suffragettes, obviously, first wave feminism brought like women the right to vote and women the right to do a lot of things. And then second wave brought us up a little bit more, but everybody is still fighting for like some of these very basic constitutional rights, really, and societal rights and cultural rights, and just making women be actual fucking human beings. And like every generation of feminism is getting us one step closer, like getting a whole bunch of things done really well. Like, we've got things now that we didn't have in the 70s, but we still don't have true equality.
Yeah, that's true. And who have I heard say that? It's difficult in general because there are also women who benefit from the patriarchy in certain ways. So that's why it's not a unified movement, because some women totally benefit from the situation, right? So that's what makes it difficult. And then they say, yeah, we've come so far, we can vote, we can do this and that and this and that. But it's more nuanced than this. It's way more complex than this, because a lot of the things now just mean way more pressure on women as well. Like the double standard and the double personality and the double pressure on women for having to stay at home and then also going to work and then swinging it all at the same time. That's not just something that's equality, it's just way more pressure. So it's not that the men have the same issues now that women have, but it's just not quite there yet. And we just get portions of it, but it's the general circumstances are so much bigger and it's so much more nuanced than, but we can do this already and we can do that already. I think it's important to always have that in mind, that there are always more things that we can achieve and that it's really important to do that.
Yeah. I like what Jane Fonda said, actually. She said, any healthy person should be in perpetual revolution and perpetual change. And like Jane Fonda was pretty instrumental back in second wave feminism. She's just fucking amazing anyways. I've got like a huge Jane Fonda crush. So
I mean, how old is she? What, 80 something?
80 something, yeah.
I can't even handle the fact that she's 80-something. I find that particularly unhealthy how skinny she is, to be fair. But she must be, like, super fit and shit. Because I'm like,
she's super fit. Yeah, she was arrested.
Just recently for climate. Yeah, I saw that.
Protesting climate change. And I'm like, fucking Bartha, like, you go. She is the kind of woman that we should all be aspiring to be. Like, this kind of person who is always changing for the better, always pushing for positive change. I'm just like, there is no greater woman alive.
I love how she, I mean, I didn't love it, but I was fascinated that even a Jane Fonda said, who is, as you said, 80-something, she said she only realized a few years ago that no is a full sentence. And I'm like, if Jane Fonda, who's 80-something, says that, then I'm like, wow, you can't even imagine how deep this shit is ingrained in our brains, how we as women and men as well just react out of cultural norm sometimes, mm-hmm. a lot of the time. So it's really tough to... Yeah, break out of these patterns that we're all living in every day.
Yeah, she said that in response, or when she was talking about the film she was in, Barbarella, where the opening scene is basically her hanging totally nude from a ceiling, like writhing around. And she said that she didn't want to be nude, but she didn't know how to say no.
She said that was the thing that she was... There were a lot of other things that she didn't like. That was basically just a side thing that wasn't even the worst thing that had happened to her while she was in the movie industry, in the film industry. That was something where I was like, great. Don't even want to know what happened to her as well, considering she mentioned that that was not the worst thing that they made her do.
I didn't know. Sorry, we'll just talk about movies for a second because they also talked about working 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't know that that was so instrumental in second wave feminism. Like, it was brought up because a question was like, when all the secretaries were kind of like, our bosses are dicks. And the question was posed, what would you do to your boss if you could get away with it? And that's how the movie 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton and Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda was born. And I'm like, this is, I didn't know that. This is amazing. Like, I love the song. And I have to say, I've never actually seen the film. So I'm going to have to finally like watch it. But
I've never seen the film either. But I knew the song when they were playing it. I was like, what? And then it was fascinating to me that Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda were already there in the movie together. And now they do Grace and Frankie.
So, Grace and Frankie is so good.
Yeah, it's so good. So, good. That I found also pretty fascinating. So they go back together like way, way, way back.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically how the documentary is set up is that they... tell the stories of the women in the book that Amanda mentioned before, Immersions. Sorry, now I remembered. And they walk them through their lives a bit and through their individual stories. And they were all interesting in every single way because some had the experience that they were married and then they got divorced because she cheated, even though he cheated as well. And then she was left with nothing. And how she got through all of that and how to grow up in a society and be a Black woman and a woman, because that's also also difficult in that combination as well.
Just following on from what you said there, there was a couple women of color featured in the documentary, and one of them said that Black women actually have to silence their gender in order to talk about the racial issues, because you can't be a Black woman and a feminist. I mean, you can, but like it is hard to be on the fighting stage for two movements, like to move both women's rights forward and racial rights forward. And I mean, that's something that a book that I recently read called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Renee Edo Lodge. She brought up about black feminism and how this is even now, like in the last kind of 10, 15 years, like recent in the new age of feminism, white women are very resistant to having Black women in their feminism spaces.
Didn't seem to change at all, considering that exactly that's exactly what they said in the documentary that we watched just now.
Yeah, like nothing has changed on that side.
Pathetic.
It is pathetic because, of course, like we need all women as part of this new age feminism.
I mean, also especially I think Black women need the movement, considering that they were, I had no fucking idea, they were sterilized secretly in hospitals. Like, what the actual fuck, man?
Yeah.
And then I don't get how you then don't want to have them on the table, especially as a feminist movement. I'm like, they need that, like, desperately need that movement because their bodies are not at all theirs. And yeah, I mean, I can't even word how shocked I was when I heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's,
yeah.
I think there are really no words for it. Like, it's so utterly ridiculous. And as two women who are feminists and who are working through like structural racism and all our own racist bias, like we see these things and we're like, but this is not okay. How do other people not see that this is not okay?
Yeah.
How was this ever okay, like back in the 60s, 70s?
I can't even wrap my head around it, how people think it's a great idea to sterilize people of color just because they're unconscious and can't give you, like, with what argument and why? Why would you? I mean, I can't even.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Had to sigh for a second.
Yeah, no, I'm just kind of like, I don't know what to say. I'm just like, yeah. This world be fucked.
This world be fucked. I mean, to be fair, most of the people also in the, like, most of the women were all part of this apparently big artist community. So they had to create their own school. They had to actually build their own female place where they can share art together and learn from each other and what did one say? Institutions are the ones who write history, and there were no institutions for women only before that, so that's why the second wave feminist movement had to create that sort of institution. They had women pay for some kind of education with them, and then when they got there, they had no room. They were sharing a place with whoever initiated that. I forgot her name. I'm sorry.
I can't remember her name either.
And part of that, being part of that institution, was also actually building that institution, which was just insane as well.
But it really made it their space.
Yeah,
it made it a space that men weren't welcome in, men had no involvement in.
Yeah.
It was a true feminist art movement. And then they did invite men in, obviously, once the art installations were up, and they did invite men in to see what it was like to be a woman. Yeah. And they said that it did help men realize, like, a lot of the shit that women go through. There was another art installation that went around the world, or at least around the United States, over 1 million people saw. And it was, oh my gosh, what was it called? Dinner Time or Women's Dinner or something. I can't remember the name of it. I should have written it down. But it was basically, it was dinner plates, but on the dinner plates were cast molds of women's vaginas. And then they were painted and embroidered, and then it was just a huge dinner party of colorful vaginas.
And wasn't every vagina, is difficult for me to say with a V thing, every hoo-ha, that's easier, every hoo-ha had a special time in history allocated to it. So basically all the dinner table, all the plates, so all the hoo-has, was part of one part of women's history as well.
Yeah. Like, I think that is such a powerful piece of art. Like, it's incredible. And the fact, like, they had queues lining up around the block to go in and see it. But the thing that I love the most about this piece of art is that they were arguing about it. These old white men were arguing about this art piece, like at Congress level, like in
one, when one dude was standing there saying, "I am a poet, but this is not art." And I'm like, yeah, fuck you, asshole.
It's like,
because let's be honest, with some things I was, when you saw parts of the, of this thing, I was like, is that one even, like, not every part of it was clearly a hoo-ha. It was just really amazing how you can also recreate a vagina. Like, they had an actual plate, but just what the pattern of the plate was then, if you look at it close and if you think about it a second, it could be, yes, that could actually be a hoo-ha. So it was just really great art, and they were just appalled.
Yeah, old white conservative men.
Yeah, and always mostly Republicans. Is that what you could see arguing about this? Though, to be fair, in those times, who the fuck knows? Maybe Democrats were the same.
What I liked, it was, I can't remember exactly who it was. It might have been an artist called Zed Budapest. Yeah. And she, I think it was her, she said, when you become aware of the rules, it's easier to break them and to be free. And it might not have been her, actually, but I love this because I think that it's important, and it's still important now for people who are trying to fight their oppression and fight the patriarchy and fight against what is going on. You need to know exactly what the laws are. You need to know the rules. You need to know what's going on, because when you do, you can be like, well, I am, like, willfully choosing to go against that and break that and start a movement against that. And in turn, you know what? I'm going to gain my freedom because of it.
Totally. I don't remember who said that either, but I think it might have been Jane Fonda, because I thought I might, maybe Jane Fonda or Lily Tomlin. They said, all of us gain from the fact that there was a feminist movement. And I think that's really important to notice, that the feminist movement is not about women fighting against men or taking away something from men, or I don't know, breaking the world and leaving it shattered on the floor or something. It's about raising everyone to a certain standard and to a certain equality, which then really benefits everyone, and not just, it's not just about making it the benefit for women, but it's about bringing everyone on the same level.
Yeah, women are fighting as a team for all women now, but it's not just for all women. And like Hillary Clinton said, human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights. And it is interconnected, and it is the same thing. And it's not just something that we need to do for women. We need feminism for men as well. Yeah. We need to teach our men how to be better and try to break this culture of toxic masculinity, because
I wouldn't even say we need to teach men to be better. We need to teach men that they can be whatever they want to be as well. And they don't need to be stuck in that not showing feelings and not like sticking to that toxic masculinity pattern that's going on, even though, because it's not benefiting them, like not really emotionally benefiting them. And the benefit that they gain from it is not really one of substance or really big importance. I mean, yes, sure, one can say money is the most important thing, but is it really? No, it's not really. That's not the thing that we all die naked and can take nothing with us. So that's not how money should not be the thing that drives you in life. That, I mean, should not be the thing that drives money doesn't make you happy. So being a good person probably does. So yeah. It shouldn't be the most important thing, and not the thing that you, that gives you meaning in life.
Yeah, but I think that being a good person might not exactly be the thing to say either, or the thing to strive to be either, because being a good person probably means that you're going to stick with the rules. But I think in order to make a change to the world and make a change to the rules, you need to break them. You need to be disobedient, and you need to behave badly. Quote unquote badly.
I think that's the way where we then walk separate ways in our approach to feminism, because I think you would, I mean, it's not an approach to feminism and it's not walk separate ways, but it's like, I feel you would be the first one in line with radical movements as well, where I'm like, I'm not a fan of radical, like in all regards. I think, yes, sometimes it's important to bend in order to, I don't want to force with violence people into a path. And I think it's possible to change society in a different way as well.
I'm not saying I'm gonna like I that to be disobedient means you need to go and punch things and burn down buildings and burn your bras. Like, I'm not saying
you
that,
don't
want to
burn
saying,
your bra.
No, they're too much money. They're too way too expensive. I wouldn't burn that. No, but like, to be disobedient, you need to make noise. I think that like this podcast talking about geek feminism, like, there are so many male geeks out there who are like, no, there is no place for women in geekdom. Like, there, you don't belong here. And we're being like, fuck you. Yes, we do. That's disobedience. Telling that those geek dudes who are like gatekeeping and being like, women don't belong here, we're telling them to go away, and we're breaking those rules that they have in their own head, because obviously we do belong here. And
but then for like, me, that's not a rule.
Well, it's not a rule, but it's being like not listening to what they want, not being a meek person. It's taking a stance, and our stance is to go forth and like
thrive.
Talk about this, thrive and talk about this and make changes and be part of this movement. And like, I think that, you know, there is a certain, I definitely think there's a level of disobedience that we're doing with Geek Caring.
For me, it's more, I don't think I would call it disobedience. For me, it doesn't feel like disobedience. For me, it's just me doing me. And I don't need...
Maybe you're already way more radical than you ever even thought.
Maybe.
You're so radical, you don't even know what radical is.
Maybe,
like you're
still
beyond radical.
Maybe I'm next level radical.
Yeah.
No, for me, it's not something that's up for discussion. So it's not that I'm not going to discuss with someone if that's my place or not, that's my place, period. So I don't need that level of disobedience because it's my place, and you that can't decide for me what my place in my world is.
Oh, Monica, you are so disobedient. I love it. Talk dirty to me again. But yeah, you're right. Like, I would be first out there on the streets protesting for women's rights, for feminism, for racial issues, injustice. I will be out there. I mean, like, to be fair, I probably won't be out there because I always hear about these events like after they've happened. And I'm like,
damn it.
Oh, man, I would have gone to that. But, you know, that's just my bad because I'm really bad at keeping up with stuff. But, you know, in my heart, I am at those front lines.
I totally notice and I totally acknowledge it. For me, you're in the front lines. Even if you're not in the front lines, you're in the front lines. So
thanks.
It's almost as good as actually being there.
Yeah. It's like I'm in the front lines in my heart. I'm always late to things. So then I'm not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like I love this documentary. I know that you said that you were just kind of like, it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I fell asleep the very first time that I started it. And when I watched it now, I was like, yeah, maybe. I recall why I fell asleep now. And I don't know if it's maybe because it was not, I don't know. It was this like biographical research, qualitative research situation where you basically threw telling your story, you get more insight into a situation. And that's basically what the documentary is about, which was interesting. But I think I was expecting something different when I started it, which maybe was also finding out more. Maybe it's just because I already knew quite from university quite something. I don't know. I mean, it was still a great documentary. And especially towards the ending, it was more and more emotionally captivating for me. And I feel it's important, especially for women who think that feminism is not their cup of tea, to watch that documentary. I think for that target audience, I think that's a great thing to watch because you see the personal insights of these all these women who've been part of it, who get so like made into these monsters. Like, they were horrible because they were so brutal and blah blah blah. They all had their reasons, and this documentary showed that in a really nice way. So I think it's a good one if you want to maybe, and maybe that's why the title is so misleading.
I don't think it's a great title.
Yeah, but that's something that people who would be against feminism would start to watch, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, maybe that's a good point. Maybe that is what it is. It's like, I can see that.
It's a bit clickbaity where I'm like, yeah, what were they really thinking, assholes? And then you start watching and then you get into these stories of every individual woman, and that's then something that makes it more personable and then more relatable. And suddenly you're there thinking, true, that's all shit, and we need to keep fighting for our rights. Woohoo. I mean, that's me putting a lot of responsibility into one Netflix documentary, but hey.
I mean, I think that there's been a lot. Like, it came about just after Trump was elected to office. And so I think that it was in response to that as well.
Yeah.
Like, very strongly in response to that, all the women's marches that took place outside the White House, like, trying to stop this new era of...
horrible.
This new era of white nationalism, men supremacist, I don't know, this bullshit that we're in now, like trying to bring more awareness to what we have fought for hundreds of years.
Yeah, probably.
But I did like the documentary a lot, and I have recommended it to two people already. Like, I watched it yesterday and I recommended it to two people, especially one of them is a friend of mine who wouldn't necessarily probably consider herself a feminist. So I think that she would get a lot out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the documentary said, it said, believe that there's something higher that we can be.
Yeah.
Because I think that we can all be better people. And if watching a documentary aimed at people who don't consider themselves feminists is the step one, then yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, there's always things about being a woman that means we still need feminism. Like, there are still hard things about being a woman. There's still bad things about being a woman, and especially in other countries.
Yeah.
And even in Northern Ireland, like, we're still fighting for a lot of shit right now.
Yeah.
And we need feminism. We need feminism in order to move forward in this world and to be better people, to be better societies, to be a better culture, to be a better place.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't even add anything to that. That's,
yeah, man.
That's why we need.
Yeah, woman.
Yeah, woman.
Yeah, woman.
Yes, people. It's people.
Peeps.
Neutral.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, watch it. Feminists, what were they thinking? Watch it.
Watch it on Netflix.
Yeah. And let us know what you think. Why not join us over on Discord, geekherring.com/Discord, and let us know what you thought about the documentary. We would be happy to get into some discourse with you.
Yes, obviously.
Yep.
Cool. I think.
Cool.
That's it.
That's it. That's what we got.
I'm excited that we had a review again.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah. Okay.
See you next week for another really cool episode of Geek Herring.
Bye.
Bye. If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.
This show is brought to you by Dragon Powered Studios. Find more at DragonPoweredStudio.com.